His neural mnemonics seemed incapable of preventing or halting them, so he lay on the bottom of the boat, gazing up at the throbbing red cloud, waiting for the ignominious spastic twitches to run their course. At these times he thought he could see himself, a tiny shriveled black figure, spread-eagled on the bottom of a rowing dinghy, like the one he thought he had been stealing, being borne along a sticky white river that stretched out to a terrible length. There was nothing around the river, no banks or trees. It just wound through a red sky all by itself, a silk ribbon waving in the breeze, while far, far ahead a speck of starlight twinkled with elusive, enticing coyness. Skittering voices on the brink of audibility circled round him. He was sure they talked about him, even though he could never quite make out whole words. The tone was there all right, dismissive and scornful. Not quite a dream. Then he remembered, as he sailed on gently, his past missions, past colleagues, old battles, victories and routs, half the time never knowing who he was really fighting for or what he was fighting against, for the right side or the wrong side, and how he was supposed to know which was which anyway. Him, a mercenary, a whore of violence and destruction and death. He fought for the ones with the most money, for companies and plutocrats, and sometimes maybe even governments. There was no right or wrong in his life. In that respect he had it easy, none of the big decisions. So the river carried him on, that white band flowing through the red sky ever onwards. The voyage was his life. He could see where he had come from, and he could see where he was going. Destination and departure were no different. And there was no way to get off, except to jump, to drown in the vast, guileful sky. That will come anyway, he thought. No need to hurry. The old resolve was still there, among the superficial self-pity and growing concern over his physical state, still holding together. He was glad of that. Right to the bitter end, that's where he was heading. The star glinted strongly, virtually a heliograph. It seemed nearer. No, not quite a dream. Chaz jerked up with a start, rocking the boat hazardously. The twin villages guarding the tributary mouth were behind him now. He was out on the Julif itself. There was no sign of the Haltane marsh which made up the northern side. The river could have been an ocean, for all he could tell, an ocean paved with snow lilies as far as his enhanced eyes could see. This was their meridian, the end of their continental crusade. They were packed four or five deep, crumpled up against each other, decaying now, but wadded so tight they formed a serried quilt. It was a perfect reflector for the carmine light falling from the cloud, turning his world to a dimensionless red nebula. The flimsy boat creaked and shivered as the current forced it deeper into the floating pulp. Chaz gripped the gunwale in reflex. He had a nasty moment when something popped and splintered up at the prow, but the hull was so shallow it was squeezed up rather than in. He was sure it was riding on a patina of rotting leaves rather than actual water. For all their stupendous mass, the snow lilies had no effect on the river's unflagging current. The boat began to pick up speed, moving further out from the southern bank, with its near-continual chain of villages and towns. Now he was sure he wasn't going to capsize. Chaz relaxed his grip and eased himself down again, breathing hard at the simple exertion of lifting himself. Up ahead, the massive ceiling of red cloud became a bright tangerine cyclone with a concave heart, its apex hidden by distance. He could see the gravid billows of stratus being torn out of their constricted alignment, sucked over the lip to spiral upwards in a leisurely procession. It must have been 20 kilometers across at the base, an inverted whirlpool which drained away into the other side of the sky. He realized its sharp, living, tangerine hue came from a fierce light shining down out of its secret pinnacle. Below it, the city of Durringham gleamed in Empyrean glory. Gora floated through the floor hatch into the Lady Macbeth's bridge. He took care not to move his neck suddenly, or his arms, come to that. His whole body was one giant ache. He had been lucky not to break anything in that last agonizing burst of deceleration. Even watching the starships attacking the station, he hadn't felt as utterly helpless as he had been then, lying flat on the groaning decking of the lounge, feeling his ribs bowing in, while blackness tightened its grip on his vision.